The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy Bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
This is a 680 The Fan podcast. To hear more live and local sports content like this, tune into 680 AM or 93.7 FM or download the Fan app.
Fly me to the moon. Let me play among the stars.
Straight up 1 o'clock, Cellini Domino. The Fan, 680, 93.7 like FM. Home of the Braves, 7:20 first pitch. Mets come to town tonight. Julio Tehran, Charlie Morton, 7:20 first pitch. Ford leadoff show here on The Fan will come your way at 6:05. Braves fans, if you're going to the game tonight, please be in your seats by 6:45. They're going to honor Hank Aaron, for this is the 50th anniversary of Hank Aaron hitting home run number 715.
Yeah, we actually had the good fortune to speak to Al Downing the day that Henry passed. I spoke to Willie Horton that same day as well. And Al Downing, look, the good news is on a night like tonight, you could look back at Al Downing's career, I hope, and realize, boy, this guy was a better pitcher than just one moment in baseball history.
His numbers speak for themselves. Also did some work with the Braves broadcast crew. Al Downing, in fact, joining us right now on the Hobson and Hobson Newsmaker line here on the Fan, 680 and 93.7 FM. Mr. Downing, thank you for coming on the program.
It's my pleasure.
Well, tell everybody about your relationship with Hank Aaron, maybe before and then certainly in the years since.
I met Mr. Aaron back around 1963, I think it was spring training. And Elston Howard, who was my catcher, my mentor, my big brother, you name it. And he taught me the ropes in baseball and life and how to get around things. And come spring training, we would play different teams throughout Florida. And when we came over, we went over to Bradenton. The Braves were training in Bradenton that time. He wanted me to meet Mr. Aaron, but Mr. Aaron wasn't playing in that game. It was coming out of a B game. But when they came over to Fort Lauderdale, he took me over to meet Mr. Aaron, and he says, this is that left-hander I was telling you about. And Henry says, well, they tell me you're going to be a pretty good pitcher if you can find home plate. I said, I'm working on it. And a couple years later, we got together again when the Braves moved to West Palm Beach, and I would see them more frequently. We played against them six times a spring. And he would always say, I'm keeping my eye on you. You seem to have done a good job of finding home plate.
So 50 years ago on this evening, as you're out there on the mound and you're facing Hank Aaron, do you remember what's going through your mind at that moment?
Yes, I had a man on first and nobody out. The score was 3-1. I was leading.
You still got a pitch, right? And the strategy, you know,
well, the
history
strategy
aside,
is to get a ground ball and turn a double play. That's how pitchers think.
Right.
That's what you call being two pitches ahead. Yeah.
So you're thinking about obviously winning the game. You're not thinking about 7:15. Do you realize the magnitude of it, though, once it carries over the fence?
Well, you're not thinking about winning the game. It's only the fourth inning. So you hear where I'm coming from now?
I got you, yeah.
Okay. You're thinking about how do I get out of this play, this jam I'm in, because it's a jam, because I had never struck out Mr. Aaron. So I'm thinking if I get a ground ball, I have a good chance of turning two. That's what you're thinking.
Right.
But I have to set it up. You just don't go up there and throw three balls in the dirt and hope she swings at them. You know, you got to set it up with something. But the magnitude of the home run, I'm thinking about that for the weekend because I had learned on a Saturday that I was going to pitch on a Monday. So that's in your mind already. But when it comes to planning how you're going to approach each circumstance in that game, nothing precludes that.
Yeah, Al, was there a conscious thought, though, at any point of, I do want to throw strikes, not because I'm a pitcher and I don't want to have any problem. I'm not, but I don't want to be the guy who it looks like maybe didn't challenge him at a moment where he could have been challenged.
You never think about that because that's why you play the game. You want to play against the best. You hope you're challenging the best. Nobody, you strike out the guy, who batted the Mendoza line, you strike him out, nobody remembers. But if you can get Henry Aaron into a double play in a tough situation, people say, wow, he was tough in that situation. But remember, again, I was a pitcher when I first came to the major leagues. had problems with my command, not with my control, my command of my pitches. And one of the reasons was I was trying to throw too hard, so I was off balance often and behind in the count often. So you work hard on that. For a year and a half, I worked on that in Triple A ball. So when I came back, I felt very confident that I can make my pitches in any situation I was confronted with.
What was your relationship with Hank after that day in 1974?
Well, after that day or the rest of our lives?
Yeah, the rest of your lives.
Oh, he was a good friend, always a good friend. And I would see him at various functions, and especially when I was down in Atlanta in 2000. And I remember that year he had a celebrity golf tournament up in Wisconsin. I was doing the Brave games on Fox South then. And he asked me, he said, "How do you enjoy working down in Atlanta?" I said, "I enjoy it, but the fans don't seem to like me." So he said, "Well, if you want to come back next year, let me know." I said, "No, I'll let you know." But it was a very, very fine relationship. Again, it's a big brother relationship. And that goes back to any young player coming to the major league. I don't care who you are. There's someone who's going to adopt you, and there's like going into a fraternity, and they're going to look after you. And Henry was like that about a lot of young players. I wasn't the only one. But I especially enjoyed it because I was a pitcher. And he didn't care. He says, "You know, I want to make sure you're a good major leaguer." Huh? So, and of course, when I'm at bat and you're pitching, you know, it's confrontation. It's the way it is.
Al, you talked about Elston Howard, and let's be honest. We try to tell these young players today, they do have it a little bit easier. You know, being brought up young, back in the day, if you you wouldn't get your BP time, you know, or you'd be looked at as a guy who was looking to take a veteran's job. A lot of that stuff was going on during the game. I'm glad you had Elston Howard to absolutely, in short, sounds like, put his arm around you and say, "This guy's going to help us win games."
Well, I had two people, Elston Howard and Hector Lopez. And when we went on the road, you weren't allowed the room by yourself. So I had the room with Elston one part of the road trip and Hector the next part of the road trip. They were veterans, so we'd always get a two-room suite. And they both had their own way of approaching things and telling you how, you know, handle yourselves. And one of the things Hector always said to me as a hitter sitting on the bench, he said, "You don't pitch inside enough to right-handed batters." I mean, that was great to hear from a hitter. Because, you know, a lot of times no one will tell you that. The only other guy who ever said that to me was Maury Wills when he was playing shortstop. He said, "Why don't you pitch inside more to right-handed batters?" And that was like 10 years later.
Al Downing with us on the Hobson and Hobson Newsmaker line. So for those that don't know, you also are a member of the Yankees team that wins the 61 World Series. And we know everything going on with that team as well. How wild was that season as you had Mantle and Maris chasing Babe Ruth?
Well, I didn't come up until the middle of July. And I was in my first year of organized baseball, believe it or not. I had just turned 20 years old. And I was coming up from A-ball. And my first start, Yogi was my catcher, and I got knocked out in the second inning. And I figured, I'm going back to A-ball, you know. And they said, "No, we're going to keep you the rest of the year because even in 1 2/3 innings, we saw something that says you have promise." And I just sat down, and Elston said to me, "Just be seen and not heard. You have nothing to offer. Just sit down and watch." And that's what I did. I sat down and observed. And what I observed was 24 guys in the major leagues pulling together as how they were going to go about winning a pennant. And we got up to around, I guess, the second week in September, and I think it was Detroit was starting to come on our heels. And Mickey Mantle very seldom ever came into the clubhouse and had anything to say. And we were signing baseballs, and he said, "Well, guys, we got to buckle down now, and these guys are getting a little closer to us." And everybody at that table just kind of perked up. "All right, now it's time to, you know, buckle down and let's go get them." And that told me, you know, what teamwork was all about. Nobody's worried about who the star is going to be, but if the star said something, you listened.
You're the only team in New York because the Mets hadn't come about yet, and certainly the Giants and the Dodgers had moved. So there's a whole lot of stories about, because there were so many newspapers and so many guys, it would be, "Hey, Mantle and Maris don't like each other. As a matter of fact, it's even worse than that." And a lot of it was, we call it clicks today in the social media world. What was your take on their relationship? Because you just talked about, you don't win a World Series if you've got two of your big dogs at odds with each other.
I think guys needed a story. I mean, you have 10, 12 writers around the cage, you can't all write the same story. So if Mickey's going to bat third in the lineup and Rogers batting fourth, incidentally, you know, Roger never had an intentional walk that year, all right? And then somebody's got to write something. And players have a wry sense of humor. So they might say something like, well, Mick, if you don't hit this one, you know, you're going to be batting fourth and I'll be batting third or something like that. Today you bat your best hitter second, which I don't understand. But that's another story. But we never had those kind of confrontations. Guys were always pulling for one another. I mean, I remember one time Roger was batting. We had a man on third. And I think it was a tie score. Was it like the bottom of the eighth inning? And everybody's playing back because Roger was not what you call a long ball hitter. He was a line drive hitter. He's like Henry Aaron. They hit line drive. Their home runs, probably their longest home runs are probably 400 feet. But they hit line drive home runs. And everybody's playing back because he hit those vicious ground balls. And he dragged one between first base and the mound, walked to first base. The runner walks home from third base. We win the ball game. That's the kind of stuff people don't put in the papers because it doesn't make for good copy, I guess. I don't know.
I know you don't need for me or anybody to tell you, but the fact that you're in the building for historic moments like the 715, like 61 for Roger Maris, that's a whole lot of good pitching in between, by the way. I hope people do look back at your career because, you know, you could throw it. The idea that you were in the building for historical moments like that, did you think 50 years later anybody like me would call you on a Sunday and say, hey, do you have a few minutes tomorrow morning to talk about this?
Well, I didn't know you 50 years ago, unless you're lying about your age. I always welcomed talking to members of the press for a number of reasons. I grew up in a small town, Trenton, New Jersey, and we had two newspapers there. We had two writers, Bus Sate and Herb Clark. Herb Clark's son, Alan, became a major league umpire. And I always had great respect for them because they covered our games in high school. I was also a basketball player, so they covered me in basketball and baseball. And I was always taught, you don't have disputes with the media, and you don't have disputes with the officials on the field. You do your job is to play ball, not to try to run the game. And so when a writer came up to me, if there was a negative story or a negative comment he wanted to know about something or somebody, I said, no comment. I don't know the source of the story. I don't know the basis for the story. But if you want to talk about me, I'll talk about me. That's the way I always approach. And also, I knew you had your job to do.
Yeah. And the idea that 50 years later, though, is it interesting to you that this many years later there is as much interest, certainly what's going to go on tonight here at our stadium on the 50th anniversary of it, but the idea that you're a part of history like this? You sound more than perfectly okay with the idea this is my job on that night. He got me on that one. I'm going to try to get him the next time he comes up.
I was very fortunate in that respect. The first year I came to the Yankees in 1961, our best pitcher, or I say our top pitcher, was Whitey Ford. Our second number two pitcher was Ralph Terry. You remember Ralph Terry?
Sure do.
Okay, he gave up the home run to Mazeroski.
That's correct.
All right. He was number 23. I was number 24. You were at home. You were put in the stalls numerically as terms of where you sat. And every day we would talk. We never talked about him giving up that home run. He never walked around with his head down. And he would always say, sit down on the bench. He was about maybe 3 years older than me. He called everybody Meat. He said, come on, Meat, sit down on the bench. We're going to go over this lineup, and you tell us how you think you should pitch this guy and that guy. And that's how I learned. I didn't learn about, well, don't throw this pitch and don't throw that pitch, because when you're on the mound, you're in control. And fortunately, you know, Ralph didn't have that attitude. It wasn't a negative attitude. When I came to the Dodgers in the first year I'm in spring training with them, and I see this big guy out on the mound throwing batting practice, I said, that's Ralph Branca. And he said, Ralph comes down every spring. We never talked about that home run with Ralph Branca. We just talked about playing the game of baseball. And he never talked about it. He said, you played basketball. I played basketball at NYU. I said, oh, I played basketball at Muhlenberg. And we laughed and talked about it. Never talked about, you know, hitting home runs and that. But if we talked about pitching, it was all about being in control when you're out on the mound. Self-control and physical, your body control.
Do you know the one thing that's not really talked about enough with Ralph Terry is he won the World Series MVP in 1962. We talk about 1960, but mentally strong enough, physically good enough to win the World Series MVP in 1962.
Won 23 games, I think, something like that. But he was a great pitcher. And see, people forget. I guess we live in a world where you want to look at the negative of things and not remember the good things. But you know, he didn't have that great a career because he didn't throw that hard. So he had a struggle to get through the 60s, but that helped me when I hurt my arm in 67 because I always reflect back to Ralph. Ralph got by throwing curveballs and changeups and putting a little bit on his fastball. And his fastball at that time probably didn't top 85 miles an hour. But if you're looking for a curveball from him and he throws you a fastball on your fist, you have to react to it. And that's where he was a master because he just knew how to dissect that strike zone so that he never put the ball on the sweet part of the bat, or he very seldom did.
Al Downey finishing up with him. He gives up home run number 715. Did so much more than that, but it's the anniversary, the 50th anniversary of Hank Aaron going deep. Tonight going to be a special ceremony. We're asking the fans, the Braves, and us, the flagship, to be in your seats by 6:45. Al Downing with us on the Hobson and Hobson Newsmaker line. You said you were friends with Hank. Did he ever tell anybody? Because it seemed like he was a very proud, secretive man when it came to letting things like this out, the threats that were surrounding him as he was chasing Babe Ruth.
Well, he came out publicly later, but I remember when we had the 10th anniversary. The night of the home run, people don't remember there were 4 rain delays in that game. And they didn't want to call the game because he hit the home run in the 4th inning. So it's about 11 o'clock at night. I'm sitting in my locker. I've been knocked out of the game. We're still in the 4th inning because we're in the second rain delay. And someone comes in from the PR department and says, listen, there will be no post-game celebration or press conference because we don't know what time this game's going to end. So why don't you just, you know, take a shower, get dressed, and go on back to the hotel? So I did. And I was talking to one of the writers, George Plimpton. I don't know if you remember that name.
Sure do.
But George and I were talking. He says, you're going back to the hotel? He says, can we share a cab? Because I have to get my bag and I'm going to the airport. And so I kept that midnight flight instead of waiting till the morning. And so we did. So the next day, Dusty Baker comes up to me. He says, hey, I heard you ducked the press conference last night. I said, I didn't know there was going to be one. I was apprised that there wouldn't be one. But it just goes to show you people write what they want to write. And when I look back in retrospect, I said, maybe I should have stayed around. You know, what the heck, everybody else had to stay there. But when I look at that moment and what it meant and how it's perceived in baseball should do more than just wait, you know, every 10, 15 years. You know, of course, they have the Hank Aaron Award now, which is great. But Hank was a model citizen. Remember, he came up at a time when you couldn't say much. No players could say much. And up until about 70, when, you know, Marvin Miller came along and he gave us some power. He empowered us. That's what happened. The Players Association became stronger, you know, and people would listen to guys like Hank Aaron. And I'm sure there are many other players who talked to Hank and got advice from Hank. And, you know, I never talked to Hank about playing baseball. Maybe I'd say something like, you know, there's certain umpires seem to be squeezing me. And he would never complain about umpires. He said, well, maybe you're trying to pitch too carefully. Just throw the ball over the plate and let the guy hit it. Not every fastball is a home run.
Well, Mr. Downing, we really appreciate it. Again, thank you for being a part of this day. It's a special day in the city. And again, congratulations on the entirety of the career, including the 67 All-Star Game and other things that were done in your career. I hope we can catch up with you again before this baseball season's over.
Well, I appreciate you taking the time to call me and reflect on that day, and hope people don't forget it. I hope everyone has a great time tonight and have great memories of Mr. Aaron, because remember when, you're too young to remember, but when the Braves came over there in 66, they were coming from Milwaukee, and I had the pleasure also playing in Milwaukee. It was a great baseball town, but people were really downtrodden when they left and went to Atlanta, which was a football town. And so even Mr. Aaron said that, you know, it was tough, you know, convincing people of what baseball would mean to us. He believed that baseball really put Atlanta on the map. That, okay, yes, it's a football town, but we do have a good baseball team. And this is the same team, remember, that was in the playoffs against the Mets in 69.
Yep.
And people didn't even pay attention to that. And here it took 5 years later, and this guy hits that home run. Whoa, wow, we got a good baseball team. So they didn't know they were watching one of the greats. And I was fortunate enough not only to have played against him, but to also have had him as a great friend.
Mr. Downing, again, a pleasure having you on. Hopefully we can talk again soon.
You have a great day. Enjoy yourselves.
You do the same. Al Downing with us on the Hobson & Hobson Newsmaker line. Like we said, throws that pitch that Hank Aaron hit out for number 715. Classy man in his own right. And tonight, a classy man, Hank Aaron, going to be honored across the street at Truist Park. 7:20 first pitch against the Mets. Ford leadoff show here on The Fan at 6:05. But please try to be in your seats by 6:45. That's when the ceremony honoring Hank Aaron's 715th home run will be happening right across the street. It was a special yet troubling weekend overall for the Braves. Austin Riley, current Brave, joins us to talk about that and more at 1:30. So looking forward to that conversation next on the home of the Braves. It's Chiellini Domino. It's The Fan, 680, 93.7 FM, and The Fan app.
The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
Hey everybody, Buck Blue here, and as a recent customer of Jim Ellis Automotive and a longtime friend of the Vice President, Stacy Ellis, man, I know Jim Ellis Automotive Group takes pride in being a family-owned and operated business. I saw it firsthand. When Stacy's granddad, Jim Ellis, founded the company back in 71, his goal was to treat every customer like family by offering a car-buying experience that was both easy and fully transparent. And it worked. 50 years later, Stacy's dad, Jimmy Ellis, grew the organization to become Georgia's largest family-owned and operated automotive group. And today, third-generation family members like Stacy, along with more than 1,700 dedicated team members, are working hard to uphold the values Jim Ellis Automotive was founded on. And that's why Jim Ellis has been around for over 50 years. Enjoy the advantages of buying your next vehicle from a family-owned and operated dealership. Visit JimEllis.com or stop by any of their 20 dealerships located throughout Metro Atlanta. Jim Ellis Automotive, where you can always expect the best. In
my eyes, in this boat, 129, Chiellini Domino, The Fan, 680 and 93.7 FM. Clips happening later on this afternoon. We'll get some bad news if you purchase some Eclipse glasses on Amazon. We'll get to that.
It's finally going to be the downfall of those people. If you don't like Amazon,
we'll get to that.
We got
about,
a story for you.
Yeah, 15 minutes or so from now. The 1 o'clock hour brought to you by AquaGuard. Notice cracked bricks, floor gaps, or bowed basement walls. The experts from AquaGuard can provide a free inspection. If you're ready to fix your sagging, bouncy floors, visit AquaGuard.net. You get a chance to sponsor and golf with this guy on May the 16th. He is Braves third baseman Austin Riley joining us right now on the Hobson & Hobson Newsmaker line. Austin, appreciate you coming on. How you doing this afternoon?
I'm good. I'm just headed to the field, but I appreciate you guys having me.
Austin, when was the last time you actually got something delivered from Amazon? Perhaps some hunting stuff of some sort?
I feel like we have an Amazon Prime package at the house pretty much every day. it's very, very easy they make it so easy to purchase something. It's tempting.
It's painless. It's a painless experience.
I know. The one swipe kills me. Because there's stuff. I impulse so much on there. Sometimes I'm like, I did not need that, but the one swipe gets me a bunch.
Yeah, I found myself buying like everyday items. Like I bought shaving cream the other day. On Amazon. No, I could just go to the store and do that. But like you said, it's right there, and I'm here, and I might as well just swipe.
That makes you lazy. No. Is what that makes you.
Yeah, probably.
It does. But hey, from a kid standpoint, when you need, whether it's plastic forks or kid forks or anything, it's super easy. Some toys here and there. When Anna was like flying or stuff, something to entertain them. That's where I like it.
So tell everybody how, if they don't know, how your life has changed a little bit in the kids department.
We got Easton will be two on the 20th, and then we got another boy expected to do August 2nd. So our family is growing in the best way possible. Little man's talking his head off right now. He keeps us busy, that's for sure, which, wouldn't have it any other way.
Austin Riley with us on the Hobson & Hobson Newsmaker line. We'll talk about the good and the bad from the weekend, but let's talk about what you have going on at Hawks Ridge Golf Club in Ball Ground. Thursday, March the 16th, your second annual charity golf tournament, and a lot of money going to a great cause.
Yes. So we, teamed up with Team Red, White, and Blue a few years back. It started out as we did our first event at Top Golf, and then I was like, hey, let's let's see if we can grow this thing. And we had our first golf tournament last year. It was a hit. We raised a ton of money, and like I said, they're doing it again this year. And it's only gotten bigger. I think pretty much every spot is filled. My team's doing a great job, and you know, raising money for our veterans is something that's grown dear to me, and to just, like I said, continue to put them in the spotlight as much as possible and show our support is what it's all about.
If you're not aware of what Team Red, White, and Blue is, they focus on enriching veterans' lives and health and wellness. Yes. So a great cause, right. As we all said, this is what it's all about.
Yeah, Austin, were you surprised that at a young age you realize you have a little bit of a voice? You can make a difference. You can help raise money. Was that something
I always tell everybody, it always kind of evolved. Like, I never knew I would be in this spot. I mean, you dream about it, but until you're in it, it's like, it's eye-opening. But I, you know, growing up watching hunting, I'm a big fan of, you know, the Realtree guys, Tyler and Bill. And, you know, they were taking veterans while I was at a younger age. And I was like, man, if I ever got the opportunity, I was like, I would love to do something like that. And obviously, you know, with our crazy schedule, the hunting side of it just didn't line up. And I was like, what other way? And then I love playing golf. So I was like, let's get involved somewhere with, you know, with the golf, the veterans. Like I said, it just timed up. So that's kind of where it has all conspired from. And then, like I said, I always tell people, I was like, I feel like they get put on the back burner, and being in a unique spot that I'm in and can highlight them as much as possible. Not only, you know, the support that they, you know, that their families need, that they need, not only whenever they're overseas, but when they come home, like I said, that health and wellness is so cool to me.
And if you want to be a part of it, sponsorship, want to try to get a spot in, I don't know how many spots are still available. TeamRWB.org/Riley. Austin Riley with us on the Hobson and Hobson Newsmaker.
Hey, you learned a lesson the hard way because you said you love golf. And I'm going to be honest, I've heard stories. Oh, look, I play golf. And then you get sort of snagged in and a veteran type player will look at you as a mark. They take your money. I mean, that's sort of what happens. Can you tell me who's taken the most from you and then who you've taken the most from on a round?
Bryce Elder has taken some of my money. Jackson Stevenson has. Those two guys are really good. You know, Jared Kelnick, got to play a couple rounds with him. He's not bad. He's kind of my guy I'm keeping a close eye on when we're playing. We play pretty similar. You know, I like to mess with taking some money from Olsen a few times. Trying to think, I don't know if I've taken any from Travi. But like I said, we have a good old time. It's, you know, for us, it's one of those things that we get to do, you know, away from the field, kind of, you know, change scenery up, get to hang out still together.
Who's a terrible liar about their handicap? Because every team usually has a guy who's not really. How about this? Maybe isn't as honest as they should be with their handicap.
Oh, shoot. You know, it's kind of shocking. Guys are pretty honest. I don't know if that's from the baseball side of it. Just like we fail so much that we just accept it. Guys are pretty true. I'm not going to lie.
So what are you? What are you now on a? Because look, anybody who's a three on their own course is not a three every place else. That's ridiculous.
I'm not even close.
So what are you?
I've actually never really taken my. I just don't ever. I don't play enough to do it. I'm a shoot like on a really good day. I'm gonna be 78 to 80 on a poor day. I'm gonna be mid 80s. I did shoot at Trump National last year to toot my own horn a little bit. I shot 73 last year. So, like I said, it's when I play a bunch, I get more consistent, but I definitely have my bad rounds.
Austin Riley with us on the Hobson and Hobson Newsmaker line. Bad rounds on the course, but good rounds so far at the park for this offense, especially this past weekend. When you're down five or six runs, what's the chatter on the bench as the game is going on?
You know, it's honestly the same if we were winning. I think that's what's so cool about this team. It's not, we don't, added pressure just only to me makes things spiral. And as soon as you start talking about, hey, we got to do more, we got to do more, we got to do more, you typically do way less when it comes to production. So we keep an even keel mindset of just, you know, you may hear some, hey, we still got a lot of game left type sayings. You know, we just got to keep plugging. That's really about it. I think that's what's so unique about this club is we don't ever hit the panic button when we're down. And I think that allows us to keep chipping away inning by inning. And next thing you know, we're back in the game. And kind of like this weekend, we were able to sneak two there, right there at the end.
Would you like to mention the bullpen? Because I know the offense when you come back from games like that, but
I didn't even, you know, you, and I, this weekend, opening weekend, so crazy and a lot's going on. I didn't realize they didn't even give up a run this weekend, which is, you know, it's absolutely crazy. They were just the backbone of the reason why we were able to get three wins. I mean, they came in and did their job and slammed the door and held it for us. And, you know, like I said, they can't say enough good things about them.
Yeah, that's as close as you get. I talked about it being a 26-man weekend. This was, you know, the button's got to be pushed right. Guys have to deliver. But there were a lot of guys who were involved in a lot of things this past weekend.
No doubt. No doubt. No doubt about it.
So when you look at the way the night turned out and maybe the season turned out for Spencer Strider, as the game's going on, do you figure out something's going on? Does anybody say anything as the game's happening?
No. You know, I didn't hear anything until after the game that, you know, something, you know, that his arm was bothering him. And then, you know, it's kind of, you know, you hear about that him going to get an MRI, and then it's just a waiting game. I know I'm for sure asking questions, trying to get information, because I want to know just as bad as everybody else. But you know, when you're not in it, you just kind of, you're just like you said, you are like everybody else. You're just it's a waiting game. And to hear what happened is just so unfortunate for, you know, for a guy that works so hard and is so dedicated to his craft. You know, you hate it.
And I mentioned, so I was in the building Saturday. They had a little press conference. Snit talked about it. But you come outside and guys are taking BP and you do realize, you know, it's...
Life goes on, man.
Yeah, it's... They don't cancel games for stuff like this.
No, and you know, it's crazy because, like I said, you gotta keep pushing, gotta keep plugging. And you don't ever want them to happen, but through 162 games, injuries are going to happen, unfortunately. We've had a bunch of guys step up in big moments. You know, you take 21 when Ronnie went down, guys just stepped up and we were able to make a run for it. It's just, you know, guys understand that it's a cruel game in that sense of just injuries. And like I said, you just got to keep out there, keep going and go play. And that other team isn't going to lighten up because something bad happened. You got to still go play baseball.
Yeah. I don't want to get too deep into it, but are you one of those guys who says, I don't mind if a pitcher has a better grip on a baseball as a hitter? I want them to be able to control it as much as possible. Is that a real sort of sentiment?
Oh yeah, sure. For sure. I think there's a fine line, but I definitely want pitchers to have grip. Guys are throwing way too hard to not know where it's going. I've been hit in the head or anything like that, fortunately. And I hope that never happens. So I'm leaning towards the, I don't mind it happening, them having, you know, whatever it may be to help them get grip. Like I said, I do think there's a fine line where there's, you know, I think it's like spider tack where guys are just spinning the ball outrageously. I think that's pushing a little bit, but when it comes to stuff where them having grip, I think it's definitely needed.
Austin Riley,
I have no problem with it.
is with us, and you're talking about injuries to pitchers, and obviously you're one of the leaders on this team, and I don't know what you can or can't say. Let's just say there's a pitcher out there, questionable background, can be a good pitcher. The name's Trevor Bauer. If someone like that is approached, or at least the thought of Trevor Bauer coming onto a team like this is put out there, do they come to Alex Anthopoulos, Brian Snicker? Do they come to one of the leaders like you on this team and maybe get your thoughts on it?
I will say they have before. Alex does a great job. He, like I said, he's he's one, you know, to me, he's the best in the business, and what he's done with our group. I think there's a reason why he's done it. He's obviously really good at, and we have a, we're big on culture and clubhouse presence, and, you know, we want the right guys. So, you know, I think makeup and personality and how he would vibe in our clubhouse is a big factor in when we go to get guys.
And certainly you find yourself being one of the leaders, Jeff Rancourt. We talked about it actually when you won the Silver Slugger. You're ready to embrace that leadership role. Do you feel like you're more comfortable in that role, albeit early in the season thus far?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I think it's the more I grow and get experience in the game and just, you know, the ebbs and flows of what happens, you know, on a nightly basis, not only the actual game of baseball, but just the, you know, what goes on in the clubhouse and stuff like that, just like figuring all that stuff out. I think I'm learning it and getting better, you know, to handle, you know, situations and stuff like that. But yeah, like I said, it's a, you know, we have a really good group between, you know, me, Olsen, Travis, Ozzy, you know, the pitchers, Max, Spencer, you know, having Chris Sale has been absolutely phenomenal. I absolutely love him to death. So we got a good group.
Hey, real quick, has situation ever dictated you going up thinking I'm going to swing for a home run? Have you had those moments already?
This season?
Yeah, just overall. I mean, is it
so
something?
I try not to, you know, I think I have thought them, and I'm pretty sure every time that I've probably thought them, I've struck out.
Mm-hmm.
So I try not to think about trying to hit a homer. I just try to put a good swing, have a good professional at bat, and whatever happens, happens. Like I said, the times where, you know, I'm not trying to hit homers, that's typically when it happens.
All right. Can you describe what it feels like when you know you've got one? Because guys have a hard time describing. They say, well, feels like I didn't hit anything. It doesn't feel like any contact was made. I've heard guys say that. But can you describe what it's like to know two steps out of the box, oh, it's gone. That one's not coming back.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's just one of those things. It's you know, you fail so much, and then you get jammed. You barrel one up, the guy catches it, and then knowing, you know when you finally connect on one, and it is one of those feelings where it's, you don't really feel a whole lot. It's just kind of like a split second thud, and it's gone. And then you know the right launch angle. It is a good feeling, I'll tell you that. But it is. It's hard to explain because it happens quick, and then you know, you try to enjoy those moments when it does happen.
Well, the charity golf tournament, the second annual, is happening with Austin Riley at Hawks Ridge Golf Club on May the 16th. That's a Thursday at Ball Ground, benefiting Team RWB, teamrwb.org/Riley for a sponsorship or to see if there's a spot available. Austin, always good having you on, and congratulations on a fine start and this tournament continuing to help a great cause.
Man, I appreciate it. I always enjoy talking to you guys, and like I said, I appreciate it.
Yeah, have a great time tonight, too, as they celebrate the 50th anniversary of 715.
Awesome.
Yeah,
yeah.
Look forward to it.
Thank you.
Thanks, Austin.
Austin Riley with us on the Hobson & Hobson Newsmaker line. We talked about the bullpen. No runs in 12 and a third innings in the three-game sweep of Arizona. Those are your Wellstar Well Stats of the day. At Wellstar, our patients are the center of everything we do. We're nationally ranked and locally recognized for our high-quality care, inclusive culture, and exceptional doctors and caregivers, one of the largest and most integrated healthcare systems in Georgia. Visit Wellstar.org today. Wellstar, more than healthcare, people care. We'll talk to Chuck and Chernoff when we come back, get their thoughts on a crazy weekend. Domino, how much stuff do you have to get off your chest?
Just a couple of things. I mean, we're just going to clean up. Hey, if you bought these, oh, God, don't go outside. It's almost like 145 now. Don't.
So in other words, if you went to Amazon and bought some glasses, we'll tell you which glasses aren't going to work when we come back.
Just wait a couple of seconds. This is the greatest tease ever, because your future sight ability could be on the line here.
He could very well be telling the truth. Chiellini, Domino, The Fan, 680 and 93.7 FM.
The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in worthy bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save. And save and win.
Hey everybody, Buck Ballew here, and as a recent customer of Jim Ellis Automotive and a longtime friend of the Vice President, Stacy Ellis, man, I know Jim Ellis Automotive Group takes pride in being a family-owned and operated business. I saw it firsthand. When Stacy's granddad, Jim Ellis, founded the company back in 71, his goal was to treat every customer like family by offering a car-buying experience that was both easy and fully transparent. And it worked. 50 years later, Stacy's dad, Jimmy Ellis, grew the organization to become Georgia's largest family-owned and operated automotive group. And today, third-generation family members like Stacy, along with more than 1,700 dedicated team members, are working hard to uphold the values Jim Ellis Automotive was founded on. And that's why Jim Ellis has been around for over 50 years. Enjoy the advantages of buying your next vehicle from a family-owned and operated dealership. Visit JimEllis.com or stop by any of their 20 dealerships located throughout Metro Atlanta. Jim Ellis Automotive, where you can always expect the best.
Who does number two work for?
All right, let's try to save some eyes. We teased it. Tell everybody, I hope you haven't gone outside yet.
Let me tell the folks who we are first.
Oh, God.
Jalini D'Amino, the Fan, 680 and 93.7 FM, the 1 o'clock hour.
People's vision is at stake here. Get to it, man.
There's a consultant always paying attention.
Brought to you by AquaGuard. So, the eclipse, I think, is upon us. It's supposed to be peak eclipse here in town at 3 o'clock.
3:04 p.m., to be exact.
Another idiot hurt.
Okay, I just saw on my neighborhood, group chat, somebody's selling eclipse glasses for $2 a piece. You need the $2.
Hold on.
Can't just give them to neighbors.
Hold on. Go ahead.
So on Amazon, if you order the bikini solar eclipse glasses, you have the wrong glasses because they will do nothing for you. And there's a lot of other glasses around Central America, as in the Midwest, that have been purchased in Cleveland, Chicago, where the eclipse is going to be stronger, that have not been FDA approved either. So a lot of people have been bilked.
Do you know this
a lot of people are going to hurt their eyes wearing those glasses.
This is Fauci's fault, isn't it?
Down the hall. This is the plot for The Jerk 2.
Down the hall and to the left.
That's what this is. People are going to go blind. Listen, how about this? Do it, don't look. Look up at the sun, don't look up at the sun. Drive to Kentucky, don't drive to Kentucky. I don't care. Here's what I keep telling you.
Chris D'Amino, libertarian.
I started the show with this. You do you. That's cool. I don't need you explaining the eclipse to me. It's 2024. It's not, as I said earlier, the year 1285, where I would have thought, oh, no.
We need to sacrifice 80 virgins.
I know why this is happening. It happened 7 years ago. It's going to happen in whatever year, 2044. There should be nobody's surprise. The Ra God, seriously, the sun god, Ra, has not decided it's over. So I'm not, all you people who are terrible in school at science and math, stop trying to educate
me. The sun's going behind some clouds, right?
Well,
that's...
So 2017, we walked across the street.
It lasts for a little while.
Chris, you were with us. We went across the street up on the rooftop here at Sports and Social. We had the glasses and we had all this stuff. I don't know. It always feels like a massive letdown. I'm looking at it going, now what?
Of course it is.
It feels like I'm going to rob somebody because everybody's staring up. I'm going to go to your house and take stuff.
I said earlier, I'm going to get a bank.
Yeah. I almost called D'Amino Nico. Yeah, I'm losing my mind.
Well, I'm a 15-year-old who had a plan.
Yeah, Nico may be thinking the same thing. Let's rob people.
I said if this was the bringing out the aliens today, I'm in.
Right.
I've seen this 7 years ago. I know why it happened.
This was
not a big surprise. Yeah, I'm not. We didn't just come out of a cave, as I said earlier, throwing rocks at each other or trying to run from the wild animals.
Yeah, but this one you could stare directly at with no glasses.
Oh, okay. I don't understand what the get back is.
I just don't think you want to say that on public airwaves because somebody does it and then they say, I heard it here.
Yeah, I'm sure you do it.
On the Bald Idiot Show.
Right. Don't
and then I have paperwork to
before 2 o'clock that happens.
Yes.
I don't want any of that hanging on.
So again, the
Braves game has been officially canceled, by the way, because of the eclipse.
No. Oh, they're honoring Hank Aaron tonight. The bikini solar eclipse glasses. If you purchase those on Amazon, they're no good.
What did those go for? Did you see? I'm just curious what people were willing to pay for.
I think they sold them in six packs, so they were like beer.
So six neighbors got together, each paid for a pair, and they limited the cost. Is that what you're telling me?
I guess. Yeah.
Now, do you want to know what happened? because we had to go to break, and you said, well, let's just leave it as a tease. Do you know what actually has happened? You didn't get to the, if you had these Amazon glasses. It's already happened.
Those are eyes melting.
You feel good about yourself. The consultant said to tease.
Burning retinas.
And all of a sudden, somebody's got no more vision.
Well, I blame the consultant. That's what he wanted.
But add to it that,
not my fault.
I know DeKalb, but I think a Cobb and DeKalb were out of school today, did digital.
My son had a half a day.
I mean, really? Are we thinking these people are this dumb?
Indianapolis. A whole bunch of people in Indianapolis. No school at all today.
Okay, we went to school when we had eclipses as kids. I remember walking home, mom telling me, don't look up.
I'm going to start a cult, man. Like, it is right. People will believe anything. Get in line. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Like, my goodness.
Well, look up. Oh, wait. All right, let's do a couple of things real quick. Did you see there was a college lacrosse player who was celebrating his third senior day because of COVID and everything else? Even his own father. As he was walking out for the third time, he's holding up three fingers. Is this it? He's asking the kid, are we sure this is it?
There was a scene in St. Elmo's Fire. Rob Lowe was at the fraternity house, and the big reveal was when you're 25 and hanging around campus, you're kind of a loser. Like, isn't that still true 40 years later if you're hanging around campus at 25?
Scholarship and still enjoying.
COVID has changed everything.
It's half the student athletes, though.
Omicron?
We just watched Michael Penix and Bo Nix at 24 and 25.
There's a group of seventh-year players this season.
Yeah, the story is the old man stopped, and he said, okay, are we sure this is the real one? This is it.
Yeah, I wouldn't have gone again. Yeah. I wouldn't
three
have
times.
We've done it once. The second time's pushing it. The third time, you walk yourself.
All right, do you want to hear one of the worst stories ever? Chuck, you like memorabilia. That's one thing. There's a sentimentality attached with being a champion. This is the guy finally breaking his silence. This is the guy who stole the Yogi Berra rings at the Yogi Museum. By the way, he had been habitual. He would go to museums and places, and he stole memorabilia. He realized the Yogi rings were going to be too hot to actually sell. So I want you to hear what this guy did.
Now, the Yogi Berra cases were something special. It was a special kind of bulletproof glass that was never going to shatter. So that's the one we used. I had the grinder with a rescue blade. And I actually cut the cases open, reached and grabbed the rings, went to the other case, pyramid cut to get the two MVP plaques out also.
And guess what he did with everything? The next day, he tried them on, then he melted them down.
I did destroy the...
He melted them down for the gold. Now, they did disassemble. They tried to get whatever diamonds, whatever was actually in it. They weren't quite as fancy back then. He melted them down one day later in a guy's garage.
Yeah, baseball card.
How did he do that with just a welding torch?
Yeah, this guy in his garage, he was some sort of fancy pants shop guy. Oh. So he had the equipment to melt stuff down, and he did it. That's horrible. And he's telling a story. He says, it's going to be a lot of people. He shows his face. It's going to be a lot of people who probably want to beat me up now if they see me. He's from Scranton. He realized, want to know why he got into this? Because he looked so nebbish. He said, I didn't look like a crook. So I would go into these museums and I would stake them out. And they would never expect me. He robbed a bunch of museums of baseball.
So, like, if I went in there,
right,
red flags would be raised. Oh, yeah. John Michaels walked in there. He may be cuffed.
Hmm. Yeah, before he did anything.
Right. So you're saying I would have a shot to pull it off?
Yeah, you'd have a shot.
No one would look twice at you.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, you'd have a shot.
Good. I didn't say that.
It's pretty much implied, right?
Yeah, you have a shot.
Okay,
I would say that you're less guilty looking than other people around
you. That's why I was never, like, in strip clubs. I always looked just too normal. Like, I would be left alone. They always look for the,
She would come over and hand you the Diet Coke because she assumed you were the designated driver.
Something, right. I was like, it's not fun for me.
I don't want to give anything away, but
actually, big picture, you had a lot more fun.
First and a 15?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. It's all relative.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true, too.
Do you know, can I give a...
We all pay eventually.
Can I give a secret of that world? What do we call it, by the way, these days?
Adult entertainment?
Yeah, adult entertainment. Can I give you a secret about the adult... I had somebody tell me this. An adult entertainer. She said the first thing they're going to look at is they're going to look at your shoes before they actually come up on you. I want to figure out, are you VIP potential? Then you know what the next thing is during a lap dance?
Hmm.
They'd feel your belt, see if it was real leather or plastic.
Really?
I swear to you. I was told that. Huh. They would size you up before they got there. Then once they got there at the lap dance...
Girls
got
to do what a girl's... I mean...
Find out quickly, is that a real leather belt or not?
It's the same
for those boobies.
It's the same 4.5 minutes to her. If it's $25, that's better than a 10.
Do you know what I said?
That's two dances, 4.5 minutes.
I said I would have done it a little bit differently. I would have walked over and see if somebody was leaning one side to one cheek. Because their wallet was so fat on the other side, I'd like to get everything out of it.
I knew I should have wore flip-flops into those clubs.
You got dressed up. You thought you were a big shot. Look what happened.
There's alligators on.
So that guy finally told his story about how he got the rings and what he did with them. All right, I want you to hear this. You know what that is?
It's an episode of ER in 1998.
No. I'm going to ask you guys a question.
My flatlined?
I'm going to ask you a question. If you knew that you were going to go for surgery, every surgery is serious. But let's say like an even more serious surgery than normal.
Gotcha.
For serious surgery.
Yeah.
Yeah. They tell you the doctor is going to be performing it. He's not a doctor, really, but his father was. Are you letting that guy do the surgery?
Give me more detail.
Okay. You have a surgery scheduled.
No, dad is...
You're going to be put under... Dad was a doctor.
Right, he was a cardiologist, a surgeon, and son is a...
Son is thinking about medical school. He's taking chemistry. He's taking biology.
Am I getting half off the surgery?
No. There's a chance.
Yeah,
no. It could go well.
No.
Probably not, but there's a chance that could happen.
He's not a doctor.
I'm opting.
Right. So can I give you...
That's all I care about.
Can I give you what I was thinking about? Bronny James. He's going to get drafted because his father's a basketball player. He's played basketball. He's taking chemistry. But what other line of work would you tell me you're going to take that guy to do the grown man work because his old man did it?
Someone
I know there's Nepo
said,
babies.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Someone online said if you look at his stats, they're much better than his father's in college. So he's got that going.
Pretty funny.
Yeah.
That's a slapstick.
See what he did there, Chris?
Moment.
Yeah, I see what he did.
LeBron never went to college.
Yeah.
Hilarious.
So I'm asking you. I know there's the Nepo baby thing. I know that's been a big thing. Somebody's going to either draft him or have a deal worked out. Wink, wink, we're going to sign you as
a free
agent.
I don't think anybody's going to draft him.
Relatively speaking, isn't it the same as you're taking a kid out
of
chemistry class?
Do I get LeBron with him? Am I really drafting LeBron for a year? If I'm drafting LeBron for a year, that's different.
You got to have that deal set.
If LeBron's retired or his foot doesn't work, you ain't drafting Bronny.
Is this a fair analogy? Bronny is basically taking a chemistry course. Therefore, since the old man is a doctor, I'm going to let him do the surgery. This is so ridiculous to me.
No, because you also get the doctor in this one. You get
okay,
LeBron
but guess
for a
what?
Year.
Guess what? What are you going to do then when the whole world knows what you're doing?
You're going to have LeBron for a year.
And LeBron's going to lie? Is he going to say?
Yeah, well, you're going to get LeBron for a year.
See, I keep saying if I'm Bronny, I don't want this.
No way.
I don't want this.
He's setting it up for
he's also
worse than what
I don't think
is.
He gets drafted otherwise. Without well, it, he doesn't get drafted.
Never mind his numbers. His heart stopped earlier this year. He's got a bad heart.
Chuck's beverage is ready.
All right, Chuck, go get your
back
beverage.
Up, though, on the Bronny thing, if you're going to get LeBron for a year, fine, whatever, be upfront about it. But if you're Bronny, you have the biggest like backup plan ever. It's called my dad's a billionaire.
Right.
So I want to go play college basketball.
Right.
Whatever happens, happens.
Right.
I'll go work for LeBron Inc. Do whatever I have to. I don't want to be ever forever known as this guy.
Let me ask you this then. So let's say you get LeBron for a year. Do you cut Bronny as soon as LeBron goes away?
I bet there's Bron's too smart to have that up. He puts contingencies
He signs a 12-year deal coming out as an undrafted free agent.
He's here as long as I'm here. That's in the contract. Like LeBron is ironclad with this stuff.
Yeah, when LeBron's gone, the kid's gone. He's by what everybody's projection is now, he's not an NBA player.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not drafting him. I'm drafting dad.
And if I'm a Mickey Mouse organization like the Hawks, I'm doing something like that.
Yeah.
I mean, if I'm a real organization.
Well, by the way, he averaged 25 a game this year.
Yeah, we brought it up.
And seven boards and eight assists. He's shooting a career high.
Yes,
I'm not saying I'm not in, but we talk about Nepo babies and all this stuff. You're going to ask somebody who's basically taken one course in college relative to the old man.
Have you met Nick Wessler?
Well, like you said,
I saw him yesterday.
Why would Bronny want this?
He shouldn't.
Can I give you the opposite of that? Isn't the opposite of all this Jonathan Scherholz? Like, everybody immediately said, oh, the old man. And, like, he has proved himself to be a very astute baseball professional.
Hold it back up. Where did you see Nick Wessler? What well-to-do crowd were you hanging out with?
I got invited down to the fancy pants seats for a few innings.
Every man over here. Bartender from New Jersey.
So wait, how does Nick Wrestler, is he in the seats?
There. Yeah, he was.
So Nick calls you down?
No. I didn't know.
He was sitting near you.
Yeah.
I don't know that I would even recognize Nick Wrestler.
Because I saw him Antoni there.
Oh.
And then I looked over at the bearded one. I said, there you go.
Sitting there.
There you go.
Okay.
One guy looks like $10 billion.
So Chuck brings up Jonathan Scherholz, who apparently has got some good acumen, too. But if you're Nick Wrestler, you're always going to be known as the Nepo baby who is at 20, whatever, got his foot in a door that you would never have
imagined. I bet it took Jonathan Scherholz about 15 years of really high-level performance for people to go, okay, it's him.
You're like Tony Khan running that AEW.
Right.
You got daddy's money.
And I guess Tony's done a good enough job, though, or no?
Well, not as of late.
Oh, really?
Their numbers are dropping.
But if you're Nick Wrestler, it's one of those things that's hard to ever overcome.
Yeah, well, I could overcome it. I fell out of the right womb. I can personally overcome it.
You sleep well.
Oh, let's see. I'm not going to be able to, or people aren't going to think I'm very good at this job. Yeah, I'm okay.
Oh, yeah, you might not care what a jabroni like me thinks, but I'm
No, I'm saying
it.
Personally, I'm okay. If
yeah,
I'm, if
I know
I'm, as long, here's what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to make sure I got a good relationship with billionaire daddy.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I don't want any surprises at the reading of.
I think, like, Dylan Fry doesn't care what you think because he's on stage with the Eagles. He's like, F y'all, I don't care what you think. Yeah, I got the job because daddy. By the way, can he play? What's the? But he's in the band, right?
So the most dramatic
thing doesn't matter.
Is it Deacon Fry?
Or Deacon, I'm sorry. Yeah. What did I say?
Yeah, I...
Dylan? Oh, yeah, Deacon Fry. Yeah.
It doesn't make it.
Cameron Fry.
Yeah.
Cameron Diaz.
I would imagine he's okay at what he does if Henley let him on stage.
But no, the only reason he's there is does he care? Because he's like, I got one of the best gigs in the world because my dad did the same thing.
So I agree with all you, but there's always male ego. And there's always a little bit of you. It's like, F those guys. They think I'm only here because, and we're right, but they don't want to like admit that. There's an ego in every dude that wants to try to show you I did this on my own.
But what is it you always say? Just call me the millionaire.
Sure.
Yeah. I think
if you preface it with that.
Yeah. He's the millionaire whose ego's hurt a
lot. But then you don't know who your friends are. You can't trust anybody, Chris. There's a downside.
You know what I do? I go to the beach all by myself.
Right.
Perfectly okay with that. I don't know who it is. So you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go to the beach again by myself.
So you guys ready for the Allen Miners Express? Oh, we're not ready to talk about that yet.
Is there a chance we get a version of this tonight?
The guy in your ear that told you have to ask that question, as a journalist, that's fine. But as a human being, that's not very nice because it's not very sensitive. And I could give a about North Carolina right now.
So that's Roy Williams at Kansas after he lost the championship game. Bonnie Bernstein has to ask him about North Carolina. Could that happen with Dan Hurley tonight when it comes to Kentucky?
Yes. Could we have a replay of that moment?
I love Bonnie to death. We all had a great relationship. That was bad timing. You just can't. Not that moment. You just can't. And I hope tonight wouldn't be the time you'd ask Dan Hurley win or lose.
You're damned if you do, damned if you don't.
That's not the time that night. Maybe it's the next day. And by the way, why would Dan Hurley leave UConn?
Oh.
Why would he want to leave that job?
Can I tell you why? Bobby was in horses in New Jersey.
Okay.
They have a... Kentucky can give you
a lot of money there.
More than Connecticut.
I think UConn could come up with, they find one or two rich, I think they can match whatever Kentucky wants to pay him.
But there's a lifestyle, and I don't know.
I heard he's a Northeast guy. Okay. That's my source.
But so was Rick Pitino. Yep. Where did he go?
Well, he's a.
Where did he go?
You just had John Calipari tell Kentucky we're breaking up.
Right.
Like, that's a hell of a comment.
Pitino has no soul. He'll go anywhere.
Hold on. Kentucky told him, we're on the verge of getting divorced. We're going to see if you can keep
Then his guys start making some calls.
Then I'll take my $33 million or $30 million or $15 million or whatever we negotiate. He looked at them and was like, yeah, bye.
Yeah.
Have we seen
I'm getting out of the dysfunction.
He was going to be on a one-year hot seat. What did we talk about? You think you're going to tell a guy like John Calipari, you're putting me on the hot seat?
Italian guy?
I'm getting the hell out of here. No way.
How much does he regret turning on Cleveland a decade ago? He would have had LeBron back, and he would have gotten $100 million.
You know the story that Pitino tells more than any other story is, he said he regrets leaving Kentucky to go to Boston. Now, I don't know if, because people now are trying to say, well, just ask Rick to come back and fix that. Hey, Rick, you get a chance to come full circle.
Hey, I'm riding in one of them white horses. I own some of them in Lexington.
He's 71.
Do you know what he regrets? He regrets he didn't work in Boston.
Of course.
I don't think he regrets
it. He thought he was getting Tim Duncan.
Yeah.
I thought they'd fix it for me. That's what I thought.
He got Chauncey as a rookie, and he got some. Yeah.
Who's the next?
He started trading guys after, or he wanted to trade guys after like 2 months.
Yep. Who's the
this
next?
This guy stinks. Get him out of my sight.
Who's the next Kentucky coach? $5 in your pocket. You got
Billy Donovan.
Weird. Wow.
He'll listen now.
Chicago.
He listened a little bit to Texas.
That's interesting. That's a good name. Is that name popping up?
Yeah.
Because I've seen Oates from Bama, and I've seen like all these others.
No, Billy was there with him.
And Billy has, he's Chicago's coach, if you don't know. Billy.
I think they're in the play-in moment.
Has said no. Finally, after last year, Billy was like, well, tell me more.
Yeah. And he's then also said Pitino guy, so that could make some sense. No,
he was on the bench when everything was good.
He coached the last back-to-back champion.
Yes, he did.
I would,
the pressure.
I would add
colorful
this.
Language to the SEC.
Just be careful you don't get Billy Gillespie again. Because Kentucky fans were like, get rid of Cal. Don't want it. Just don't get Oates turning you down. Don't get Hurley turning you down. Because Kentucky, last time they did the Gillespie thing, they got turned down by three or four big names. Kentucky had to deal with that.
Which is the worst thing in the world. When you should be above being turned.
And this is with blood,
And Kentucky thought they were going to get their ducks in a row. You know, you talk about that list that the AD has in his drawer while Coach Cal finished the job this year or did well and kept the job. Well, he turned it all around in his favor.
All of this eventually unfolding because SMU has raised a gargantuan amount of money to make up for the TV media shortfall, which allowed them to hire the USC coach, which allowed USC to hire the Arkansas coach, which Arkansas could now hire the... All of this happened because SMU...
There's still college basketball being played on top of everything else. I think Dan Hurley would be an incredible hire because he don't give six rips. You think Kentucky Joe's walking up to him to tell Dan Hurley how he should do things? Not a chance. I'm just telling you the horse thing was a real thing.
I believe
that. And I'm just telling you that lifestyle. I don't know if he wants to be up in stores or if there's that, wow, you know, we got kids and there's greener, literally greener pastures.
Well, the reason it might not work is the reason you just mentioned, because those boosters are going to want say and he's not going to give you any say.
Oh, nothing. Nothing. And he might
They'll walk right through you. I talked about Belichick walking through high school coaches up there in Washington. I think that was my perception during that convention where his kid's coaching now on the defensive side. I think not only would Dan Hurley walk through you, he'll tell you to go blank yourself as he walks through you.
I kind of want my coach to be able to do that to everybody. I just need for you to raise the NIL money. I need the horse money to come our big picture direction. I don't need you trying to tell me because you own a car dealership how I'm supposed to be doing things.
I would say this. The SEC, which is already pretty good, gets 10 times more interesting. You got Cal over there in Arkansas. If Kentucky gets the right guy.
Do you think he has a yard sale like I talked about where he sells all his boy stuff?
What you just talked about? Are you worried? Like what you just said about the car salesman or horse whoever? That's like the undercurrent that started like beginning in January. Mm-hmm. In fact, Oklahoma was the first example I heard. There's a guy who gives like $500,000 a year, and he's like, no, wait a minute. He owns a business, an industry that he's really good at. He says, if I'm giving all this money, I need to start having some approval of players. That was the first I heard was Oklahoma, specifically guy who's an expert in, let's say, selling new cars. I'm giving all this money? No. You need to approve these players through
your boosters. Your boosters aren't boosters. With the right amount of money, they think they're partners.
Yeah, everybody's Buddy Garrity.
Yeah.
It's real. It's real. All that's real. All of that is real. So you know right now, Jackie Sherrill's going, I had to leave three jobs because of this stuff?
Listen, I joked about Buckles McHenry, the non-existent Texas A&M booster.
He's a partner.
That's real life now.
He's a partner. Mm-hmm. Billy Donovan, I don't know if he wants to deal with whatever you have to deal with.
Just college life, right.
Just he can think back, but when he was there in 07 in Florida,
he could cheat probably.
It wasn't this. It wasn't this. So does he want it? Look, to go to Kentucky, I'd coach Kentucky before I coached the Bulls. Mm-hmm. That would be me.
It comes down to lifestyle, to your point. Yeah, right. Kentucky's a better job. It's just, do I want that?
Yes.
Or do I want this where I go to shoot around in the morning, go back to my hotel, have off seasons off?
Dan Hurley, by the way, is going to be called by an NBA
team. He should be.
Jay Wright is the first one. I'm going back to what I said when this Cal stuff started. I said I'd fire John Calipari for Jay Wright. I'm calling Jay Wright first, second, and third. He is going to say no to me three times. Not once, not twice.
Quietly. Have him do it quietly.
I will bring a horse right to wherever he's staying.
A horse. Got an extra $33 million. Sorry. You got an extra $33 million versus what you would have had 2 weeks ago.
Do you buy him? Do you hop along right? Do you just really go all in on the idea that, Jay, we can make you so happy down here?
You tell him you're changing the name of Rupp to Wright Arena?
I mean, you got to talk to him.
No doubt.
Now, the question is, it's not going to happen, I know, but will the Braves somehow, some way kick the tires on Trevor Bauer? It's our Twitter poll of the day. 58% say they should. 36% say no. And my third option is Spork. That's coming in last at 6%.
I would say Spork. It's not in their DNA.
I mean, I get it, but...
It's not about the pitcher. It's about he's still got three cases, by the way, left to beat.
DeMeeno. That's what DeMeeno was saying.
Wants to pay attention to that.
There is more
here than
meets the eye behind the scenes.
And I don't know if he's guilty or not. It's not my point. They're not doing it. Like, no. We can spend all this time. It's the
talent.
They're
not doing it. I agree.
Why
has nobody done it?
What do you guys think that nobody's done it? That a sports world today that doesn't care about morals. That will give anybody a second. They're all looking. 30 teams are like, we're passing up this cheap, talented guy.
They're getting closer.
Are they?
That's what you said, though, to start the show. And you've said this about Trevor Bauer.
For months.
There's something else going on.
So here's what I would say. The teams know stuff.
I'm so tired of the thirstiness of some of the people that represent him. They keep putting stuff on social media that says a Guardians fan is holding up a sign. We want Trevor. Right. They repost this, which is so amateurish to me. Here's my condition. You want me to think about Trevor Bauer because I ain't thinking about him now. First of all, let's stop talking about he's Tom Seaver reincarnate. I have no idea. He's got a baby Cy Young. He's got a baby Cy Young.
He hasn't pitched since 2021. So, I understand all that.
So stop talking about how great
you believe
he is.
I'm just telling you on paper, it's low risk, high reward.
If it doesn't work, you
cut him loose. He's going to play for the major league minimum.
Here's what his people need to do to have me consider having the conversation. I believe this is me. I believe baseball has seen things that we have not. I need his representatives to take everything that baseball has seen and make it all public. If you keep telling me, well, a New York Met fan, we're going to repost, they want Trevor Bauer. Take everything that they have that I know Major League Baseball has seen, I believe they have, and you make it public. Then I will start to believe you're not not an ass clown show. Mm-hmm. You're not just doing stupid things for your client.
They're not going to take that approach.
Okay, well,
they're not going to do that. Originally, he pitched against Dodger prospects, and he was great. And then he pitched against Yankees. Real players, and he was good. And so, like, he's going to have a few more of these, and what they're going to see, what they're trying to do is build a resume of there weren't fan reactions. Like, nobody it's protested.
I don't think it's the fan reaction today, though. That's always overrated. Fans get over stuff. Fans don't. We just want our player to be good.
I think that's worry about that is why he's not signed.
The Yankees don't have Gerrit Cole, and they haven't even kick the tires.
Oh, well, he hates him, by the way.
No, whatever. Nobody's calling.
No, Gerrit Cole is on record. He hates him since UCLA. That doesn't mean the Yankees don't work.
You know what the Yankees would say? If we think he could win, they've had guys hate each other before. Teams aren't calling him. To Chris's point, I agree with it. There are things we don't know that their investigators or baseball knows with these other three cases. I don't know what's out there or not. Nobody's calling. The Braves aren't going to call.
If his side says, here is everything that baseball has. Here's every text, every video, every statement, every recorded statement. If his side puts it out, then I'm gonna know, okay, now tell me, why is this a problem? Why can't you sign Trevor Bauer? Okay, well, then I'm out. I don't have to have the conversation at that point. This is all my belief. I think Major League Baseball has seen things that none of us have. And his side just wants to push a narrative of,
well, he's not banned. That's the thing. He's not banned.
Which is even more damning for him than nobody will call him. He's available.
Of course it is.
Nobody's calling. You're saying Major League Baseball has said things.
And people are saying Rob Manfred, the commissioner, has blackballed him. There's other reasons.
Collusion.
I'm just telling you, man. On the surface, it seems to make perfect sense to me. But as you said, it's probably not going to happen.
And here's the thing. The World Series are bust in this window. So that would mean we take some risks, right? Sure. They're good enough to get to the playoffs without him. What happens then? And let's see what happens at the deadline, what becomes available. There's a move that they might have to make. And I know this isn't 2021, and we can't relive it. They won a World Series with an animal bullpen and a bunch of bats. Not saying you can replicate it, but that happened 3 years ago.
True.
That might be the best way to do this now. The only fear now is you can't lose anybody else. Like, that's where this gets
scary. Certainly a little, I think, in MASH. I mean, my gosh.
They're better offensively.
Yeah, but you can't. What they did on Friday and Saturday.
That's not real.
As great as this lineup is, that you cannot sustain that.
But you can score. This lineup can score six a night. Not that way. But you have to face them four times? Like, Arizona's like, I don't want to face them again.
You know,
four times we had to do that?
Arizona's got a problem because their last four games, they didn't catch a pop-up the other night. They walked a guy at the wrong time. I'll tell you this. That Chadwick Trump. Let's give him a round of applause because what he did yesterday behind the plate.
Sale loved him.
Sale says, I won't shake him off. He doesn't shake off any catches.
He said he hasn't shaken off anybody since high school.
It's crazy.
He blocked 359 footers.
Yeah.
He blocked 359 footers with a man on third. Two with the man on third, one with the man on second. He worked yesterday.
He seems to be Sale's guy.
But let's also add the level of pitching injuries. Like, the Braves are not alone. I just told you about Gerrit Cole and
Yuri Clay Perez, Kershaw, Shane Bieber.
Like, it's Verlander's the list. Making a rehab start.
The Shane Bieber one, where the hell did that come from?
He had started the season so well.
It came out of nowhere.
2-0, no ERA.
Right.
Zeros across the board. Oh, wait, sorry.
You know there's an idea that Trevor Bauer's to blame for that.
Yeah, because it's the
grip stuff. He's shining the light on the,
no doubt.
So
can I give you my solution? And it's not a solution because it'll never be done. Like what I said about quarterbacks, unless I have one of the three, four, five guys that I'll pay money to and stay away, I draft one every 4 years. I'm tired of it.
Yeah.
Here's what I would do in baseball. You're a three-inning starter. You're going to back him up, and then I'm going to my bullpen. I'm going to get 3 innings out of my
bullpen. Tandem starters?
Yeah, all day long.
Teams have done that in the minor leagues.
Unless I have. But I'm not talking about an opener, Matt. I'm talking about I'm going to build my rotation unless I have a guy.
Sure.
See a Gerrit Cole.
See him, he got hurt.
No, I understand. Yeah. I'm saying while they're healthy, you're not on my only 3 innings
list. Was Nolan Ryan with the Rangers or Astros as an exec?
I think he was the Rangers.
Well, I think he was with both.
Okay, but I think when he was with the Astros, their minor league system switched to tandem starters.
That's what I'm doing.
Throughout.
You get three innings, you get three innings, then I go to my regular
Somebody's
bullpen.
Tried this.
You guys read what Dr. Andrews said? Because everybody's got all these theories. I will lean on Dr. Andrews for this. So Dr. Andrews, I don't know if this is new or recent, but the statement that Dr. Andrews made, he said, I started following the injury patterns and the injury rates in the year 2000. He said, back in those days, I would do about 8 or 9 Tommy Johns per year in high school. high school age or younger. He said the majority still were major league and minor league. He said in today's situation, the whole thing is flipped. The largest number is youth baseball. They've surpassed what's being done in the majors. It's a terrible situation. He said the obsession that we all know with velo and spin rate at the youth level is having a devastating impact on arms and the game. He said the kids are throwing 90 in their junior year of high school. The ligament itself cannot withstand that kind of force. He said we've learned that in our research lab. Baseball remains a developmental sport. The Tommy John ligament matures at age 26. In high school, they should redline at 80. And we're doing this right now at 90, and everybody's velo. We are killing these guys before they get out of high school.
The velo leaders, average per pitch, the four of the last four, if he counts Strider now, if he has to get the surgery, Tommy John surgery.
This is not going to change.
What does Jacob DeGrom do? He uses his slider as his velocity
pitch. The torque on the forearm. And the
like, he doesn't throw a fastball. He throws a slider.
I thought what Glasnow said was rather interesting. It popped up from a couple of years ago. Without using the sticky stuff, the amount of torque he put on it.
This is not
changing anytime soon.
I'm guilty because I did think curveball. First thought was when I heard the Strider thing, damn. Second thought I had was a curveball.
Yeah.
And because I don't know the reason why. Mason Miller's a kid who pitches for the A's. He's a rookie. He threw 14 pitches at over 100 miles an hour. This is his weekend. And the joke is, schedule your surgery.
Schedule your surgery.
I think it's a 21 or, yeah, I think it's a 21 or 22-year-old.
Because he's been, by the way, he's been throwing 90 since he was 16. The arm doesn't have it in it.
Hey, what's the rules? Let me ask you. I know it's T-ball, coach pitch, and then you go up from there.
Right, you can pitch from there.
Would there ever be a day where they actually say, 15 and under, you can't throw harder than this. We're going to put a clock up, and if you throw...
I don't think that day's coming anytime soon.
Is there an age?
I agree with it, but I don't think it's happening.
Agreed.
Okay, because I'm wondering if there's an age where people would go, wait, at 13, nobody throws 70 miles an hour because that means you're throwing your body behind this pitch.
We tried to keep an eye when I was coaching. We tried to keep an eye on that. I know a lot of other teams didn't. They let those kids pitch into the ground.
Well, that's the problem, right? You're supposed to have that pitch limit per week, and we know that stuff gets all manipulated.
I'm talking about velocity.
But it's velocity and volume, though.
But because the reason I ask, you know there's Pop Warner football. If you weigh this much, you can't play.
Sure.
You know, CYO basketball, if you're this tall, you can't play in this age group. Would they ever just look at 14 and under and go, by the way, here's what's going to happen?
It's a good idea. If you throw over this,
you're not getting rewarded for it. We've got to take it down.
How about the repercussions for the coaches? How about we actually
have scouting departments? The problem is the scouting department. Go tell a scout that, you know what we're going to do? We're going to look to have healthier arms. Go find us the guys who throw 88. Let's sign them to professional.
It's called Bryce Elder. Then you're like, I can't have Bryce Elder.
Right. You're out of work.
And then we see the kid from either Puerto Rico or East Cobb or Taipei go to Williamsport and strike out 21 kids in a game. And we realize that's how you win.
You know how many of those are major leagues?
Oh, almost none of them.
None of them.
Carney Lansford made it.
But to all our points here, you better have the
Piscota.
Next. You're going to get him through 24 and 25 years old. You better have the next wave.
Piscota. I'm going three innings.
Yeah, Spencer Strider case in point. And like I said, now welcome the Alan Winans Express. I'm going to keep calling it for now. I'm jumping on that train, man.
Hey, it's him. It's Darius Vines. It's some A.J. Smith-Shawver at some point.
Waldrop's
still in double A. But yeah, I mean, all of those are going to be part of this until you... And we can't do the trade thing for 4 months, people. Like, they're not going to do anything until July.
I'll do it in July.
It's fine.
If Houston continues to take the pipe, they've got pitching.
Yeah, call Verlander.
Aside from the outrageous Trevor Bauer theory, other than that, the names we just mentioned, that's who you're going to see in this rotation.
And that, to me, that's a move. If you're going to, like, a Verlander would make a ton of sense if he's healthy at that point. I have no problem doing something like that. I don't think it would cost you a ton. You have to root for some teams to be bad now. And root for Houston to be bad.
We're 10 games in, and we're rooting for a team that's won gone to seven straight ALCS series.
Sure.
To have a bad season.
Yeah. That's what we need now. More money, more problems. I mean, there are certain cities that they just go, you lose your best pitcher and you're done.
Correct.
We're trying to figure out, not only do you not think you're done, what are you going to do to piecemeal it? How do you band-aid it?
Yeah, and good thing
we have a bullpen and an offense.
Stop with that, though. The Braves' bullpen. And this isn't because I've seen 10 games or whatever. We said this for a year. This has a chance to be one of the best bullpens this organization has ever seen. They have like seven guys that you could say, here's late inning, high leverage stuff, and you feel great about all of them. Like, there's not one guy that I'm like, don't put him in this spot.
You're using them like you used him this weekend.
You're right, but you know that's the way the game is played. I wish you were right that they didn't overuse
them. Churn and burn there, too. Get ready for
all
that.
All of it, yes.
So that's what we are facing. We are also facing a day without back in time. Today is the anniversary of Hank Aaron. The 50th anniversary is 7/15. So we'll just talk about that and mention the fact that there's going to be a special ceremony prior to first pitch. 6:45, the Braves are telling you, please be in your seats. 7:20, first pitch tonight. 6:05, the Ford Leadoff Show coming your way here on The Fan. I want to thank Al Downing for joining us today. He gave up number 7:15.
I think they should do it this way. They tell you at 6:45 to get in your seat. We start at 7.
Yeah, not just a bad idea.
We have to have that place full for this moment.
Al Downing snapped at me a little bit. Domino took over the interview point forward. I don't know what I did.
Man, you can still sign autographs today.
He's 82.
You know what he did? By the way,
he didn't sound 82.
No, but he's 82. And you know me and 75 plus.
Can I just pretend? We have a button that says.
I do something that upsets them.
It says TB. That means top back. So if I. This is how this worked.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Let me give you what happened with Nick tonight when. He didn't snap at you, but
he thought
you weren't thinking like a pitcher. Yeah. So here's what happened. Pretend I hit the talk back, and Nick says to the room, this is why you got a table, old guys.
I said this is just goes back to the fact that old guys don't like me.
Oh, this Chuck Yeager again?
Well, that was the second line.
Yeah.
Shut up!
Didn't Ermy have a moment with you, too?
He probably did.
You didn't really want to lay it all at the feet of Mr. Downing, so the second thing you said was, maybe it's a me thing.
Yeah. I understand that.
You didn't want to snap back, though.
No, but Al Downing, want to thank him for joining us today. Tell him the stories about Hank Aaron and then some aside from 7:15. Also, Austin Riley joined us. And don't forget, his golf tournament is coming up May the 16th. That's a Thursday, Hawks Ridge Golf Club in Ball Ground, benefiting Team RWB. TeamRWB.org/Riley if you want to be a part of it. Want to thank everybody on the other side of the glass, Derek Thomas, Adam Gillespie, along with Matt Lear, Cullen Madden, and Brian Gebhard. Enjoy the rest of your Monday. We're back tomorrow at 11. Cellini, Domino, The Fan, 680 and 93.7 FM.
This is a 680 The Fan podcast. To hear more live and local sports content like this, tune into 680 AM or 93.7 FM or download The Fan app.
The winningest team in baseball also has the most saves, and people who save the most money are winners. So start earning saves by investing in Worthy bonds for only $10 each. These bonds earn a fixed 7% APY, and there's no fees, penalties, or minimum balance required, and they can be redeemed whenever you like. You can even round up everyday purchases to buy additional bonds. Go to worthybonds.com/save. That's worthybonds.com/save, and save and win.
Hey everybody, Buck Ballew here, and as a recent customer of Jim Ellis Automotive and a longtime friend of the Vice President, Stacy Ellis, man, I know Jim Ellis Automotive Group takes pride in being a family-owned and operated business. I saw it firsthand. When Stacy's granddad, Jim Ellis, founded the company back in 71, his goal was to treat every customer like family by offering a car-buying experience that was both easy and fully transparent. And it worked. 50 years later, Stacy's dad, Jimmy Ellis, grew the organization to become Georgia's largest family-owned and operated automotive group. And today, third-generation family members like Stacy, along with more than 1,700 dedicated team members, are working hard to uphold the values Jim Ellis Automotive was founded on. And that's why Jim Ellis has been around for over 50 years. Enjoy the advantages of buying your next vehicle from a family-owned and operated dealership. Visit JimEllis.com or stop by any of their 20 dealerships located throughout Metro Atlanta. Jim Ellis Automotive, where you can always expect the best.
Spring is here and baseball is back.
You can't forget the Derby. I love the hats. Do you have yours yet?
My hat? I treated myself to a whole outfit.
If you want to be able to treat yourself, then you should check out the Nest Savings Account at LGE Community Credit Union, where they want you to reach your savings goals faster.
Take it from a pair of 680 The Fan wives. Head to lgeccu.org to find out what makes their team number one in Georgia.